Welcome to the Bahamas Reef Environment Educational Foundation's Our Blue Bahamas podcast here on Guardian Radio, where we talk about promoting the conservation of the Bahamian marine environment that sustains our way of life. Today, we are talking about mangroves, because mangroves matter, and they are nature's coastal border. We're going to talk about the vital role that mangroves play in our coastal protection, biodiversity, and combating climate change. Today, I'm your host, Crystal, and I am here with Heather and Jasmine. So, we're going to just jump into it, and we're going to talk about what exactly mangroves are and where they can be found in the Bahamas. Jasmine, I'm going to let you take the beginning of this.
Okay, so mangroves are these special groups of plants, and they're very special because they have these unique features where they're very salt tolerant, and they have these these key features which makes them able to grow in places a typical plant won't be able to grow. And they can be found in a lot of our wetlands. They can be found in water wetlands. They can be found on our coast. They can be found in basins, and they can also be found, like, you can just find a mangrove just growing in the middle of a seagrass bed on a bank. So we have a lot of mangroves, and like I say, they do thrive in these aquatic, salty environments.
Mm-hmm. And mangroves seem to be kind of like the part of the landscape of the Bahamas. If people don't really notice, I would urge the listening audience to go online and look up mangroves. And when you see them, then we have the red, the black, the white, and the buttonwood mangroves here in the Bahamas. So I want you to look those up and then notice how much mangroves we have around us, because it is a very, very notable part of our Bahamian landscape. Heather.
Yeah, so like Crystal said, there are four kinds of mangroves that are native to the Bahamas. We have the black mangrove, the red mangrove, the white mangrove, and the buttonwood mangrove. Aside from buttonwood, we also have silver buttonwood, which is a more decorative version of regular buttonwood. But like Jasmine said, these mangroves can occur really anywhere. They like to occur in marshy areas, and like she said, they have adaptations to really tolerate growing basically in water or near the coasts, especially dealing with a lot of salt, sunlight, sea, waves, and changing tides. They have to adapt to both living on land and living partially in water, so they're quite amazing and astounding plants, in my opinion, that they've been able to adapt to living in both ecosystems.
Mm-hmm. And we spoke a little bit on another one of our episodes about mangroves and why they're so important. But I do want us to really flesh out a little bit more in this, since we're specifically talking about mangroves here. And when I think of mangroves, I always think of mangroves as a super plant. Right? Because they do so much for us here in the Bahamas. So, Jasmine, why are mangroves so important for coastal protection, especially during storms and hurricanes?
I'm so glad that you say that. So, one of the adaptation mangroves have is they have these root systems that can make them really strong. And when we think about a marshy area, we think of an unstable soil. But mangroves' roots have adapted to actually be very strong in these storms.
And so they're basically anchored
down.
They're
anchored down. Mm. So even when a storm comes, and hopefully, and sadly, some of the storms have destroyed our mangroves. But if you see post-storms, the root systems are still really there. So it's still, even sadly in its demise, it still is forming some type of coastal protection and some type of anchoring and breaking down the wave energy. They're breaking down the wind energy and all of those stuff. So that's one of the reasons, like you said, we call them a super plant.
Yeah. And you know the next really cool thing about mangroves, now that you say that, I feel like mangroves are kind of excuse me, very symbolic, being to the Bahamian, plight almost, right? They're so resilient and they grow back and the anchors are there. So although everything on the surface may have been removed, these plants are still there and they are determined to grow back and to come back stronger and to be there again when there's another storm that comes.
But sadly, Crystal, mangroves do take a while to grow back. So when we look at those magnificent mangrove forests that we have in the Bahamas, they took decades and decades to actually become that. So that's so important. That's one of the reasons why we should preserve them as well.
Yeah, and like we said, mangroves are really integral. They act as the nursery for most of our fish and marine species that we see in the coral reefs or even on our plate. Those fish and organisms started out as juveniles in the mangroves because it allows them protection within those roots that anchor them into the soil and into the mud. They find solace in hiding behind the roots from large predators, and it allows them to survive while they can't really defend themselves like that. So mangroves are great homes to be nurseries for a lot of juvenile fish, and even sharks pass through mangroves during their initial stages of life as well.
I'm so glad you said that, Heather, because if you actually get to see the red mangrove, which is the mangrove that is mostly in the water, they have these amazing prop roots, and it almost acts as a cage, so like larger predators won't be able to get to juvenile animals, like you said. So it's really important. That's why you should actually go and actually see a mangrove
wetland, right?
Yeah,
it's very important to go. So we have actual national parks on the island as well that are accessible for Bahamians, that you can also go and you can visit and you can see them. And we also at Brief, we do a lot of field trips there as well. And we've taken students there, we've snorkeled there. We embrace our mangroves and we embrace our national parks as well. So this is another way where you can actually take the opportunity, if you follow us on our social medias at Brief, BREEF 242, or at brief.org, BREEF.org, and you can see when we plan our field trips and our excursions to see these beautiful mangroves.
Yeah, mangroves are great sites of recreation and education. A lot of people enjoy kayaking, snorkeling, or even just wading in the water, looking at different organisms, or bird watching. Mangroves are home to such biodiversity. Biodiversity meaning a rich and lush amount of different organisms. There's birds, crabs, sponges, corals, algae, sharks, all different kinds of organisms that thrive in these mangrove ecosystems. And from my experience snorkeling in mangroves, I'd say it's one of the clearest waters. Mm-hmm. They are filter feeders. There's a lot of filter feeders in mangroves, such as sponges. So the water often is very clear, very visible, especially at high tide. And it's really a cool and refreshing experience snorkeling in a mangrove. I do encourage anybody who's listening to take the opportunity to even just get your feet wet in the mangroves and really appreciate that beauty.
Mm-hmm. There you have it. This is your sign to go on a mangrove excursion. Jasmine.
I'm so glad you said that, you know, the mangrove water is so clear. A lot of persons have a misconception that it may be
a mangrove swamp.
Certain words kind of turn us off from going into and snorkeling in places like this. And one of the reasons you see that clarity at mangrove forests is because with them serving that barrier between land and water, that's one of the reasons why we have such a clear water system and why our beaches are clear, because the mangrove networks actually trap sediment and like natural organic, like what would fall off from a tree and stuff like that. So it actually filters out our beaches and filters out our water. And I think that's one one service the mangroves gives us that we don't talk often enough, that one of the reasons we have such clear waters, clear beaches, is because we have a filtration system from the mangrove forest.
Yeah. And on that filtration system, I also want to note that mangroves are carbon sinks. So what does a carbon sink mean? A carbon sink is basically mangroves absorb a lot of the excess carbon dioxide from the atmosphere. So when we think of carbon dioxide, we think of those gases that are contributing to climate change and contributing to the greenhouse effect that's making us feel extra hot in these summers. We've had intensifying heat waves. Even underwater, we're seeing heat waves. And so having those mangroves in place and not really, what is it, breaking down?
Breaking down.
And not cutting down our mangroves is really important. And when we think about industrialization on the shore, we're really losing that asset that really protects us. And that's why in these coming years, organizations and governments have started talking about implementing blue carbon credits. We've heard in previous shows that we are a small island developing state, and so we aren't really that big contributor to those gases that we have in the atmosphere. And the effects that we experience as a result of climate change, however, they can be paid back to us in the form of keeping our mangrove ecosystems in place and not really industrializing in those integral areas.
And one thing that comes to mind, too, is the fact that we see all the time organizations like our partners, Waterkeepers Bahamas, and other organizations out there replanting mangroves, right? And this is a wonderful effort because we know about the importance that mangroves play in the Bahamas. But if we are out there and we're putting all these conservation efforts in place where we're, you know, making sure we're going out there and taking all of these people to replant the mangroves, and then we're also clearing them down in demolition sites to build things, we're kind of like canceling out all of the positive efforts and the productivity, right? We're taking one step forward and one step behind at the same time and stagnating ourselves.
Yeah, that's such a great point. Like you said, we have to learn how to crawl before we walk. So the best thing what we can do is protect these mangrove forests instead of, you know, because we do already have natural threats such as hurricanes. So what we can do is probably, like, when we see developments come along, what wants to put a marina in a mangrove forest, like, we can actually take a stand and speak against those things, because, like I said, that it helps protect us from storms. It filtrates, it acts as a filtration system. It also
is a nursery for many of our fisheries, all those conch and groupers that we love so much.
Exactly. So the best thing to do is just protect it in the first place.
Okay. So also, I want to go back a little bit about mangroves and the protection of mangroves. We are in Hurricane Ali, basically, right? And the Bahamas, hurricanes are no surprise to us. They're no stranger to us. How are mangroves so important for our coastal protection in the Bahamas, this small archipelago of islands in the hurricane belt, and especially during these strong storms and hurricanes that we see every year, basically?
Okay. You remember previously I would have said that these root systems are very strong anchors. So when we think of a wave, we may see a 10-foot wave like on the, above water, but also wave goes about 10. If you see a 10-foot wave up, you see it's actually a 10-foot wave down, so it's actually a 20-foot wave. So the mangrove storm is breaking the wave energy from underneath the water and above. So, and like we said, mangroves are salt tolerant to an extent. So when the when these waves hit the mangrove forest, they still have some level of resilience against it, so it doesn't completely wipe out from a large wave.
So there are a lot of people too who think that one of the ways that we've done kind of retrospectively, I don't know if that's the right term, is to build like seawalls or storm walls, right? Are mangroves equally as beneficial as these storm walls, or are they better?
Well, Crystal, I think you know the answer to that.
And why? A lot of people make this argument.
Let me just break it down a little bit. Right now, we are thinking about how we can solve some of these issues, and what we're looking at is nature-based solutions. Nature-based solutions are solutions that already exist in nature, and they are extremely capable, and they have been doing this for years and generations, and they've been doing a good job at it. So why do we reinvent the wheel? So seawalls, they do offer some level of resilience, but if we left the mangrove forest or we did our due diligence in protecting the coastline in the first place, we would actually have a natural mechanism.
Heather, I could see you itching to say something.
And along the lines of what Jasmine says, a mangrove doesn't need maintenance. A mangrove can self-sustain, and a mangrove can reproduce. A mangrove can create a larger wall that reinforces larger waves. And having those mangroves in place is the first step. If we don't have those mangroves, we've seen communities where they don't have mangroves, and we see the increased flooding that we experience. And so these mangroves aren't just random plants that are on the shore. They are actually integral to the way that this island works and the way that we experience everyday life.
So we're advocating right now for mangroves and nature-based solutions rather than putting in drains and walls every time when we have these problems. Now, in some places, I think you'd probably agree with me that it may be too far gone, right? There are some places where the mangroves have completely been taken away. There are a lot of infrastructure built. Is that the situation where you then say, okay, let's see if we could find another solution to mitigate? Or can we kind of combine both?
We definitely have to combine both. So what we'll have to do is adapt to the damage that we have already done and also mitigate, and that means just like prevent any future like the mitigation measure would be protecting it. And the adaption is okay, now that we have to consider building our infrastructure a little bit higher, our foundations have to be higher. And I love something what Heather said. She said, you know, that the mangrove forest replenish itself, and all these things, these adaption methods that we have to implement is costly. So, I mean, we don't need a contract to, I mean, you know, like you definitely need a contract to build a seawall.
Yes.
But
if and you then have maintain some, it, and make maintain sure there are no cracks.
And all of those things. But if you just provide mechanism and provide policies in place that these mangrove forests are there and they're thriving and they're doing the job that they're naturally and it's cost efficient and all of those things, we need to be smart moving forward. But like I said, there is some damage done, and we do and it is going to be costly to adapt to these floodings and putting more drains and pumping out water, because we have already done damage in those areas.
So to add on to this question, kind of just adds on to some of the things that you and Heather have already been explaining, but what threats are mangroves currently facing in the Bahamas other than development? Because we've talked extensively about developments, but what other threats are mangroves facing here in the Bahamas and globally?
So we at Brief have an acronym that we use called CHOPPY that outlines all of the possible threats or threats faced by an organism. So it goes climate change, habitat destruction, overfishing, pollution, invasive species, and trade. One thing I will note for the mangroves is that they are hubs of biodiversity, as we know. So fishermen will obviously be more attracted to those ecosystems to get better gain, better quality, better numbers.
Outside and, of the national parks.
Yeah, sure, that's what though. I was going to yeah. say. So that's why it's really important that we do have these marine protected areas yeah, and MPAs, national parks MPAs. That really have no take zones, but also areas that just highlight mangroves themselves. Mm. I especially like the no take zones because they're areas that organisms can go to replenish, and they're areas that wouldn't have that threat of overfishing. And they're that last lifeline for our other mangrove ecosystems in the case that we do see them all depleted. Mm-hmm. And then you have spillover zones on the edges of marine protected areas where fishermen can also benefit.
Okay, awesome. Jasmine, you want to add anything? I feel like in a global sense...
Well, you said we should not talk about the human impacts, but...
No, for sure.
I mean, mm-hmm. that was question, you mm-hmm. know, but realistically, humans are the biggest threats to the mangrove system. So that's why we must become aware and know how we can better, like, protect these environments. So.
Okay. And how can everyday Bahamians help to protect mangroves or get involved in mangrove restoration projects?
We at Brief, we do host schools and civil organizations teaching them about the importance of mangroves. We can come to you or we can bring you to a mangrove forest. So it's really easy talking about them, but it's just such a magnificent experience when you get to see the prop roots or the aerial roots, the pneumatophores on the black mangroves, and then also being very deliberate in having these in our curriculums, because now mangroves mm-hmm. are a part of our curriculums. So now we're actually seeing a more of a demand for field trips into our mangrove systems. So policies in place to actually support protecting our mangroves, and policies would only come if we advocate for them. So that's another mechanism we can use.
So I heard you say you called it a mangrove forest. I know that a lot of people still call it mangrove swamp. So what's the difference between the mangrove swamp and the mangrove forest or mangrove wetlands? I've also heard that term. So define for us what these things are.
So yeah.
I just think we should be very deliberate in how we describe our mangrove powerhouses. You know, certain words do carry nuances. Like if you heard swamp, you wouldn't want to go snorkel in a swamp. But it is actually a forest. It's a plant. It's a diverse ecosystem with trees and different species of trees that holds spaces for different animals and provide a myriad of different services to us. So mm-hmm. it's a forest. So
and what is the water like? Is it like super salty or?
Yeah, the water in the mangroves is exceptionally salty because, like we said, that adaptation that mangroves have allows them to expel the salts out of their cells. So you will find that all the excess salt that the mangroves cannot absorb will be on their leaves. If you lick a leaf, it might be salty. Yeah. So all that water, that salt is going back into the ocean. So you have the compounded salt from what the mangroves absorbed, and then you just have the salt that's regularly in the mangroves. And then you have to think about changing tides mm-hmm. as well. Is that salt going to be concentrated with the tides going mm-hmm. out or not? In most cases, it's not, but
yeah, so
it's something to think about.
A lot of people think that, you know, the mangroves are cut off from the ocean, and we don't really think that, oh, you know, they're connected.
Yes. I think what Heather said is so important because, you know, like I said, mangroves exist different places. The type of water you'd find probably in a creek would be different from an in-water wetland, which is, like, more susceptible to rainfall, so it may be extra salty at this season or during our rainy season to be a little bit more fresh water into the mangrove. And then mangrove also exist in our ephemeral wetlands, freshwater wetlands. So mangroves don't only exist in saltwater environments. They and they exist in freshwater.
Oh, do you have any examples? And do they have? Is that in the Bahamas too?
Yes, yes. See, the Bahamas, we don't have a lot of freshwater wetlands, but you do see them in some of, like, I've seen one in Eleuthera on the Leon Levy Preserve. They do have a freshwater wetland there, and it's beautiful. But the thing is, our freshwater wetlands tend to have dry seasons and wet seasons. So unfortunately, sometimes developers see a wetland in its dry season and think it's probably a good idea to put development there. But there are certain environments that do change based on seasons.
Okay. And how does this, so there is, we spoke about development on mangroves and so forth, but how does this impact tourism? Does this have any impact on tourism at all, or is this mainly just has this adverse effect on Bahamians living in areas where mangroves may have once upon a time been?
Oh my goodness, mangrove forests are such amazing spots for birders. Persons travel all around the world just to come in our mangrove wetlands to see some species of birds that are very uncommon, that we see nowhere else. And, you know, I'm a birder, so I think I'm pretty biased when I say this, but our mangrove forests just have so much different species of animals. And then persons like to take excursions such as kayaking and snorkels, and all of this is a part of our ecotourism product. So, and then also for the services it provides with filtering out the beaches, we do market the Bahamas as sun, sand, and sea. So one of the reasons we have such clean and pristine white sand is because we have certain mangrove forests filtering out the water, some of that organic sediment. So that's another factor that we can consider. So
I would never have thought about that, Jasmine. That's incredible. What are some misconceptions that people may have about mangroves, and why are they so critical for us in the Bahamas?
So, yeah, a lot of people just think of mangroves as probably, you might look to a mangrove on the side of the road and be like, oh, that's the product of flooding, but those are just dynamic wetlands that might fill up with a rainfall or a rainstorm, or they might see a mangrove and see it as, oh, that's the ocean, I can't go past there. But it's really something that they can explore. A lot of mangroves have boardwalks and educational modules that people can explore and really learn. And I think a lot of people think that mangroves are inaccessible to really explore. A few mangroves have boardwalks on them set in place, or you could even, a lot of them are not higher than your knee in depth, but I would tell you to be careful because the soil is a bit unstable. So make sure that if you do plan to explore a mangrove, you have your running shoes ready and all your proper gear. And if you want to snorkel, be sure that you're gentle because the sand and the silt at the bottom is also susceptible to if you're snorkeling as well.
Okay, excellent. So we're just in a couple, the last few minutes of the show. I just wanted to know if you girls had any closing words for the audience, any calls to action, anything of that sort. Jasmine?
What I would like to end this podcast on is, let's learn a little bit more about our mangrove. Let's make it something in our week to do, just to look at some mangrove. Whether you're passing on, I would say, the highway, and we have that beautiful mangrove forest by Lake Cunningham, or, and just think about how much services and that it's providing for us, whether we know it or not. So, and having that connection to that environment would give us more of a drive, more of a passion to protect it. So let's consider a mangrove this week.
Yeah. And if you feel passionate from this episode about protecting your mangroves and you don't know where to start, or you may feel uncomfortable, feel free to join any of the mangrove planting opportunities that are available. They do a lot of mangrove planting, especially in Abaco and Grand Bahama. So feel free to take up those opportunities as well, or contact a local NGO to organize a mangrove boardwalk for your friends or any school group. And that's just one step towards learning more about your mangroves.
Yes, and I think Brief also has a Brief also has a mangrove poster for teachers as well, and yes, and a lot of teaching resources. How can people get how can teachers be able to access those resources?
Teachers can just come to our office, and we'll be happy to supply their classroom with mangrove and other educational posters. So feel free to call if you don't know where we're at. Our number is 327-9000. So just give us a call and you can just come up and we'll be happy to supply a classroom with mangrove educational materials.
Thank you so much.
We also have our mangrove slates as well that you can clip onto you if you ever want to snorkel in a mangrove. And those are also available at our office.
Okay, awesome. Great stuff. So thank you so much, Jasmine and Heather, and thank you, our listening audience. You can tune in once again, same place, same time next week for another episode of Our Blue Bahamas.